No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Maria Sanchez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So feel free to call in and be part of the discussion at 888-627-6008, or you can go to the, what do we call it, the shadow box at the bottom of our page, and you can put a question in there. We're really excited to have with us tonight a very special guest. But first, let me say hello to my co-host, Maria. Maria, how are you?
I'm well, although my state is burning. I have a brother who's been evacuated. He lives in Northern California. And my sister also is in Northern California. The ash and the soot is terrible. We have poor air quality here in Los Angeles, so we're safe so far. But yeah, it's like, yep, this 2020 is something else, huh?
Yeah, it's horrible. Well, on the brighter side, we're lucky enough to have with us tonight Joe Madison. Joe, known as the Black Eagle, is a groundbreaking radio personality and legendary civil rights activist who can be heard every weekday morning from 6 to 10 Eastern Time on Channel 126 on Sirius XM's Urban View. If you haven't listened to Joe's show, you need to listen, because it's an amazing show. It really is. And he was kind enough to have me on once, and I was just so impressed by the operation. And he's a generous and gracious man, and he's come to be with us a second time, and we very much appreciate it. Mr. Madison, welcome to the show.
Well, we can cut out the formalities.
All right, Joe. Thank you. No, I
appreciate the respect. Well, I really do, and I'm really sorry to hear this. You know, that this it's almost like this country is hit not only by a pandemic, a fire, two hurricanes at one time.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a plague, you know. It's almost biblical.
Yes,
it really is.
In proportions. And I'm just wondering if somebody is sending us a message that we better take care of business come November.
I really,
my heart just goes out for the people on the West Coast. My wife is from Los Angeles.
And, is she?
Yeah. And she was born in, she was reared in Los Angeles and born in Berkeley. So we have relatives, and I have a lot of friends who are in, like, and it's awful. I mean, it's just terrible what we're going through, and the leadership that we have.
Or you mean the lack thereof?
Or the lack thereof. That's a good way of putting it. But no, Mike, I have such respect for what you've done to get us at least one step closer to statehood.
It's a
very difficult job, but you know, more people know about it because of this program and the work that you're doing across the country. So, thank
thank you for that. Thank you. And let me ask you, since you're such a media personality and you've been in the business so long, what did you think of the Democratic? I was a super delegate to the virtual convention.
Oh, where
what
are
did you?
You
think of that as a TV show? Yeah, I've been I've been at the last 11 consecutive conventions, and this was very strange to me. But how do you think?
I'm gonna also ask you what you thought. But I got to tell you, I'll give you my thought. Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I just switched to my earbuds. I thought it was uniquely different. I appreciated the fact that the speakers, every single speaker, looked into that camera and spoke to each individual, each of us. It was like someone said, it was like they were in your living room. And as opposed to, and I've been to many of the political conventions, and you know this, people speak to hundreds, sometimes thousands of people in an arena, and they're not talking to you. They're not talking to me. Now, some folks are good at looking into the camera, even if they're in an arena. But I did not miss the balloons and the crowds and the applause and waiting for the applause line that you always get. I personally thought it gave me an opportunity to really focus on the speaker, and I have this fond saying of read with a third eye and listen with a third ear. And because of that third ear that I've developed and have asked other people to develop, you know, I really got a chance to hear this and see the sincerity. So I really and thoroughly enjoyed it. And I'll be quite candid. I enjoyed the brevity of some of the speakers because they were forced, because of the time limitation, to get to the point. They had to get to the point. And you know, it's the old adage, KISS, keep it simple. Yeah. And I think that's what that's what a lot of people do. Of course, when my wife sends me a note when I'm speaking, it's KISS, which is entirely different. It's keep it short, stupid. But
stupid,
you know,
yes. That's why I said the stupid part. I didn't want you to think that I was calling you that.
and that's your job, right? It's to keep us online.
Among many others.
Well, I don't know that I'm a good judge of it because, you know, there were parts of it like when they did the roll call. And as they were going through the roll call, I was thinking to myself, this is going to bore everybody. They're going to turn off the TV.
Yeah,
and I can't tell you, I've heard from dozens of people that they loved it.
Yep.
That
they
absolutely loved it.
Yes. I was like you. But let's just, I mean, we're actually creatures of habit. You know, we're so used to those of us and who have gone over the years, we're so used to, Mr. Chairman, the great state of so-and-so, and with such and such, and such and such, and such and, like, you know, you sit there and say, oh, hell, get to it, you know, cast, oh, this was entertaining. It really, it really was entertaining. And the other thing, it was multidimensional, because how many people can you every speaker, and you you know, stand there. Everybody's dressed alike. And they, come on, let's be honest, Michael.
Yeah.
Most of them, Republican as well as Democrat, might be a little juiced up.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know?
And you especially know? in years past. Now, I haven't seen that much in the most recent times. But I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I thought the people were very creative. I thought the states were very creative.
Well, and it was orchestrated really well. You know, I remember I was given a job when Jimmy Carter ran in 1980. I was behind the stage, and we were reading as he was putting up a film of Hubert Humphrey, and he did exactly what you said. That great American. That blah, 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 and went on and on and on. And he said, and now we're paying tribute to Horatio Hornblower. I looked at me and said, is Horatio Hornblower even American? And somebody else said, he's not even real. He's a Gilbert and Sullivan, you know, like opera. And you know, so they didn't have any of that either. You know, they were able to get it. But let me, before I let Maria have a word in edgewise, let me ask you one more thing. Yeah. In his speech, Biden said, maybe George Floyd's murder was a breaking point. Maybe Representative John Lewis' passing was the inspiration. America is ready, in John's words, to lay down the heavy burdens of hate at last and do the hard work of rooting out systematic racism. You think America's ready to do that?
Jennifer? Well, I would add this. We're ready to do better. Mm-hmm. We can do better. I wouldn't disagree with any that what he said at all. And I attribute that to the young people. I really mean that. And this is because this is a generation of your children and my children who have recognized this dream that Dr. King talked about, which, by the way, we're going to celebrate, what is it, the 60th, I think it's this Saturday. With Al Sharpton is going to have thousands of people who are going to show up in Washington and they'll all be properly masked. And I've had Al on the show to talk about how they're doing it. Our children have grown up in integrated neighborhoods and integrated schools and integrated businesses, and they see this craziness with some of the police, with the systemic racism, with the Charlottesville, and they're asking themselves, "What the hell is this? Mm-hmm. Who are these people?" And they don't represent me, and. And by the way, many of these young people, for the first time in their lives, voted for a African-American man to be president of the United States. They've watched them be joint chiefs of staff. They've watched them be on the Supreme Court. They've watched them run the Secretary of State Department. The reality is, I think these young people are saying to us, we're not going back to where the Trump folk want to take us. And so the answer to your question is yes. And I also think that when you hear the slogan, Maria and Michael, when you hear this slogan, make America great again. Yeah. And wait a minute, that takes you back That's what it just psychologically, rhetorically, it takes you back, because the natural question is, make America great again, when? When? When wasn't America great?
Right.
And what era do you want us to go back to? And we keep telling these young people, you live in the greatest country of the world, and then you are saying to us, we're not great. And then I think the other last thing is, I think young people, black and white, brown, Asian, are saying that this is about humanity. And everybody, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, everybody has a right to live. And that's really what George Floyd's experience meant to me. Everybody has a right to live. And that's what the young people are saying. I just hope they'll take that same energy that they've expressed over these last months and show up at the polls on 11/3.
Me too.
Well, vote early. I'd like to agree with you, Joe, about...
Yeah, vote early, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, the convention, I thought there was an intimacy that you referenced because they weren't speaking to the crowd, and as you said, they were speaking to the camera and therefore in our living rooms, that it was more poignant than all of that noise and the rhetoric and then the interruptions and, you know, how they pander to the crowd and all of that. None of that was happening. We got to focus on them, their legacy, and their message. And for that reason, I think it was more profound and powerful than other conventions have been in the past.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think you're absolutely right. And it may be the new model conventions. I absolutely agree with you. It's like the medium we have that we're using right now.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a very intimate medium. And hopefully it has and it has the impact that you and Maria and Michael, that you want, especially when you start talking about statehood and all the issues we're bringing up. But by the way, let's talk about the medium. Young people today, let's be quite candid. Their ears and minds and heads have been trained to, not go long form. And what I mean by that, they get their news and information short form.
Well, sound bites, if you will.
Yeah, right? In a way, sound bites. But I remember who was it? This said one young man who does documentary said one of the most difficult things he has is raising money for documentaries. Because a lot of young people, they don't like hour-long documentaries. It's 15 minutes, maybe. If you got to get it to me quick and fast, and I think that's what that represented a lot of. Because that's how they look. They have that TV is in their hands. They're holding the TV. They're not like us. They're holding the TV, and they want it quick, and they want it to the point, and that's just how they're trained to listen and quite honestly think.
Yeah, my son watches basketball on TV, and that's the only thing he watches on TV. My girls, I don't know that they ever watch TV. They watch Netflix, whatever it is. They're always on their laptop computers.
Marie and Michael, my grandson, you spoil your grandchildren, right?
Of course.
I bought him a flat screen TV, and I just out of the blue asked him, Maria. I said, how you like your TV? Oh, yeah, that's great. I said, well, what do you watch? Games.
Yeah. Games. Yeah. Gamer. Yeah. My sons are gamers, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Big-time gamers.
And then I was with my very young granddaughters, and, of course, we were all masked up. But we were over there. Their mother was listening to Pandora when we walked into the house, good old Motown music, because that's my second home. And the girls, they quite honestly wanted to show us some game that they have where they dance. They compete with dance steps, and it's sort of like a cartoon. And they keep score on whether they mimic the dance steps. That's what they use their TV screen for.
Yeah. Yeah, it's certainly changing dramatically, and you're right. I mean, the upside is we get to reach lots and lots of people through this medium. The downside is no matter what your nutty position is about anything, you can find, other people on the internet that agree with you, whether it's QAnon right? You can find
I want to ask
people
Joe
everywhere.
About that.
Go ahead.
Into that, Joe, talking about brevity, your radio program is from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. That's hours a day. I had a morning drive show. It was only from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. And I know what goes into making that, but our listeners don't. And would you mind pulling the curtain back to let us know what does your day look like? When do you start? Who is on your staff? What do they do? When the mic is hot at 6 a.m., what does that mean to you and what has gone into that moment?
Well, we are. Let's start with we're up. Everyone is up at. I'm usually up about 3 a.m. Then my wife, who is the executive producer, she's up by 4. Little side note: I make sure she has coffee in bed. You got to take care of. And she's the executive producer, so you take care of the boss. Right now, remember, we're prepping now. I mean, we're prepping all day. Sure. We're watching the news. We're watching what's going on. This conversation may be part of the discussion tomorrow. The producer Sam Nassau, he has been emailing me and texting me stories all day long, all weekend long, and then we sort of list. We list a group of stories that we want to cover. Now, let me give you an example. Tomorrow morning, I am really very upset with Ice Cube and P. Diddy and some of these young people who are going, especially young African Americans, who are going out on here on the internet and saying, well, the Democrats they didn't have a black agenda, and they didn't give African Americans anything to vote for. I am mad as hell about that, and quite candidly, I'm going to be starting with that, and I'm now going to have to do obviously my homework and go through, and the producers will do the same thing, go through the platform that the Democrats have put out there, the agenda, the legislative agenda. You know this, Michael, being a senator. You know what legislation is pending that impacts African Americans. Everything from wanting to create and finance broadband in communities that don't have it to the HEROES Act. And I am so angry at them because tomorrow morning I'm going to say to Ice Cube, and I don't give a you know what about how famous an entertainer he is that you don't do anything to help your political enemy. And that's all this does. And then I will couple it, Maria, with the fact that we have a audio tape of Donald Trump actually saying to African Americans that he was happy in a way that they didn't vote in 2016 because they didn't like Hillary, and it ended up being a vote for him.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And then we have, let's see, we have the president's sister on
yes.
tape.
Isn't that precious?
Lacks character. So wait a minute now. That's 3 hours right there. wait a minute, Maria. And then we have the fact that Nancy Pelosi, is trying to get, $26 billion? Is it 53 billion?
For the postal service.
Yeah, for the postal service. And that the Republican Senate is probably going to stop it. And that the president has said he would veto it. The post office, some of us old enough to know that that was one of the mainstays for African Americans to, as it related to getting a job, and still employs a high percentage of African Americans in supervisory positions to mail carriers. There's 4 hours right there.
So, Joe, would you contact Ice Cube and ask him to be a guest on your program so you could educate him or hear? Because he was on Instagram yesterday doing what you're talking about.
Oh, I know it. I saw it. That's what I mean by all weekend long. That's exactly what's pissed me off. And, and look, reality is he probably listens to the show. The answer is, he's welcome. Look, I'm at the point where I'm not a journalist, so I'm not going to ask him what the hell he was thinking. I'm going to ask him, is he crazy, and that he ought to pay attention before he starts making these kinds of statements, and that he's only doing this. What he's doing is only helping a man who basically has proven to be a racist, who's a homophobe. I don't have to go through. His sisters already has told us, and his nieces told us what
his
he
lies.
Is. So why would you do something like this? And personally, I'm going to send a statement. It's not about putting him on the show. He can listen to my show. By the time I get finished tomorrow morning, I'm certain he will get word. And we talked about this last week because this isn't the first time this has come up. He's just Ice Cube has reiterated what P. Diddy, another young African American entertainer, said back in June. He actually said, I want all of you to hold up your vote. Hold the Democrats hostage for your vote until you get a black agenda. So they're just promoting it. And quite candidly, in my opinion, I think they're doing what the Russians want us to do. What want us to do. Tomorrow I'm going to make a statement. I don't give a damn whether he comes on the show or not, to be quite candid.
Well, actually, by you, first of all, your passion is infectious. So right away, you're compelling and riveting, as you know. That's why you're so successful. But second of all, you can walk your listeners through why he said is detrimental to that. And him saying earn that vote, to make both parties earn that vote, might keep voters at home, which is exactly what we don't want to happen.
And then confuses people,
right.
it confuses people. We did this, and again, the reason I'm passionate about this is because last week we went through the platform. We went through the legislative agenda. We talked about the anti-lynching bill, named after the anti-lynching bill, which has been 200 attempts. In my opinion, George Floyd was lynched. Whenever these police shootings take place, that's just another form of lynching. One Republican from Kentucky, the junior senator from Kentucky, is holding up the passage of that bill, and there have been 200 attempts. We went through each and every legislative agenda in which the Democrats have put on the table, have voted the John Lewis voter voting rights bill. My God. And the Republicans, Senate, they're blocking it. The list goes on and on and on, and I delineated those lists. So my question was a rhetorical one. What do you want? There's the legislative agenda. Grow up. If you're going to get in the if you're going to get in the political game, if you're going to do it, you know, then be politically mature and look at the legislation that's been introduced. Look who see who's blocking it and be politically mature. This is not a game we're playing as you point out, Maria, early voting or by election. You've got a president in the United States who says that even he's already laying the ground.
Yes, he is.
Whatever if the outcome doesn't go my way, it's not going to be legitimate.
Right.
Now, you know, and I think Joe Biden and Kamala Harris said it. This is really about the soul of this country. And I also said to these young folk, will you please study history and recognize that what we're hearing is almost reminiscent of what Nazi Germany went through in the early and late 30s.
Yep. Well, let me ask you, one of the things I respect most about you, Joe, is that you do speak your mind. And, you know, I met last week with Tim Scott's legislative director, because we're trying to get a Republican to support D.C. statehood. And for our listeners who may not know, Tim Scott is the only African-American member of the United States Senate. And there was an article in the paper today.
Only African-American Republican.
Republican member of the Senate. And one of the reasons that we've approached him, because we have almost 350,000 African Americans who are disenfranchised in D.C. But there was an article today on race and politics where they talked about how Tim Scott has to do this balancing act between being a supporter of Donald Trump and still being accepted in the black community. And it's funny, it struck home with me because Scott's guy said to us, he feels your pain. He believes that D.C. should be equal, but he won't be the first Republican to endorse the bill. That's just too it's just too risky for him, which I understand as a politician. But is that right, do you think?
No. First of all, I don't understand it. Well, first of all, let's go back about speaking my mind. That's because I'm not a politician. And so therefore, I'm an activist. You know, one of the things we're working on my memoirs, and the guy who's helping me write, Professor David Canton, he said, you know what? He said, we need to title the book Radio Activism. You're a radio activist. Politicians aren't activists, but let's understand that's why he has to do this balancing act. He's got to get votes for his favorite piece of legislation. But here's the thing where I disagree with what his spokesperson said to you. Tim Scott's not running for re-election.
Now, no, he's not.
Understand that. He's not running for re-election. So what does he have to lose? Now, unless, hold on, it just dawned on me, Michael. Unless he's looking for higher office, like running for governor.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's what I mean by being politically mature. Now, that would make me suspicious as to why he won't be the first. But again, it's the old adage of, you know, in politics, there are no permanent friends or permanent enemies, just permanent interests. There's a great book. There's a great book by a former Congressman William Clay Sr. called Permanent Interests. And it's really the history of the Congressional Black Caucus and blacks and the Republican and Democratic Party that date back to the Reconstruction period. And whenever you're talking to any elected official, I think you have to be honest. It is many times going to be about permanent interest. However, there are exceptions, and some of those exceptions, one of those exceptions is a man we honored, whose life we honored this summer, and that's John Lewis.
Yeah.
John Lewis put principle above politics his entire life, even in his political career. He put people above possessions, and that's what I look for in an elected official. I want that person to put the principle above politics. And in this atmosphere we have now, and look at them, as Maria said, the lack of leadership we have. The man, his niece has said it. His sister has said it. Authors of multiple books, even his fixer, Michael Cohen, right, has said he lacks principle. He lacks principle. And the sad thing is, too many Republicans are following him. But Scott might be trying to. He may not run for the Senate, but he might be seeking public office. And, you know, he just simply doesn't have the courage to step out and be the first to do what's right. But now I have to admit, for example, the anti-lynching bill. He has been very supportive of the anti-lynching bill. But what, on the other hand, when Jim Clyburn has introduced legislation to help finance some equity in broadband, and look at South Carolina. Why did Jim Clyburn, he not only did it for his constituents in his district in South Carolina, but, you know, these poor, rural communities, students, hospitals, don't have access to broadband. Why wouldn't Tim Scott support that? And he doesn't, from my understanding. And that's where the politics get in the way.
Well, I got to say that one of the great privileges that I've had since I've been elected is I got to meet with John Lewis a few times over the statehood issue, and I had some interactions with him, and I'm sad to say that there is a lack of leaders like him in Congress these days. You know, everything you said about him is true, and I should tell you, you know, we wandered by his office one day with our intern, who was a student at the University of Georgia, I'm sorry, Georgia Tech. And he said, he looked up at the door and he said, "Oh, that's my congressman." And we stepped in the office just to let him know that we had been there. And Lewis came out and took this kid and sat down with him for 20 minutes in his office.
Wow.
And all he wanted to know was what this, you know, where are you going to school? What are you going to do? What everything was about Teddy. And you could tell that he understood that he had just given that kid a memory that would last his whole life.
And
that really is what leadership is about. And unfortunately, I don't think we see enough of that on either side.
No. I mean, and I'm saying this not because I'm on your show, but because, you know, I have watched, and I want people listening to know this, I've watched Michael from a distance. You know, see, I'm one of the nice things about being on radio, people don't immediately recognize you unless you open your mouth and they recognize your voice. But you get to watch people sometimes from a distance when the cameras aren't on them. And you see how they interact with people. I can tell you, I've been in the presence of some very prominent people, very popular people, wealthy people, and I've heard them say things privately under their breath, as we used to say, and it's really showed their character. But then when the cameras are on them or the crowd is around them or they're shaking hands, they put on this fake smile but Michael, I watched him and Michael is Michael all the time. I'm watching you when you don't even know I'm watching you. So,
I thought that was my wife's job.
And I get to speak to that too, Joe, because I'm getting my PhD in media psychology, and my dissertation is on the eradication of female genital mutilation.
And I sit
on an advisory board that's in the District of Columbia. And last October, we had a 5K and awards gala. And guess who came with me both times? The senator. He came to the gala on a Friday night. And then on Saturday, the 5K, he wore the shirt. We walked from the Lincoln Memorial to Washington and back. And then Michael, unprompted, was asked to speak extemporaneously in front of everybody who was assembled there. He was not only gracious and generous, but incredibly eloquent, and a man standing up, a political man, for a cause such as female genital mutilation. Do you know how that reverberated?
Thank you. Absolutely.
Oh, thanks.
I mean, this is, and but then most, again, it is politics. And as a reason, politics and people start with the same letter. And people need to, and so, you know, those are the kind of folk we need to be in position of an influence. And so I'm not saying all this because I'm on your show, you know, and this is the honest to goodness truth, because if it wasn't true, I wouldn't even brought it up. I wouldn't have said anything.
And you know, I always try to think of this guy. I heard this guy who was a black doctor from U of Penn who graduated like number one in his class. And he said he absolutely hated this doctor who was his advisor because the doctor sent him to an emergency room in Harlem to do his internship. And he said he was ready to do his big practice in suburban Philadelphia and have a big house and all this stuff. But when he went to the emergency room, he had been there for 30 years. And he said once he saw it, he couldn't walk away from it. As long as he knew it wasn't there, he was okay. But as soon as he saw it, and that was the thing with Maria's issue. When you told me how many women were subjected to this, it stunned me. It just stunned me. That
200 million women are alive today that have been cut.
It's like, and
what it's about, is it not about exposure?
Yes.
It's about exposure. And then the same thing happened to me when I went to South Sudan. I didn't know much about South Sudan and the civil war that they had before they became a country, but I was exposed to it and went back to that war zone 6 times. Look, I tried to get other media people to go with me, and there's one. I've told this story on the air, so I can tell it now. Geraldo Rivera. I had just come back. I think it was the second trip. And I said, man, there's a civil war. Women are being taken as slaves. They're being taken as slaves. They're being raped, deliberately raped and impregnated, because this is part of what the Sudanese were doing. And I said, you've got to come back with me. And bring your cameras, because I forget at the time he might have been with ABC, and this is years ago. And you know, he said to me, "Well, what hotel are we going to stay in?" So what are you talking about? We're going to be in a tent in the bush in the middle of the Civil War.
Yeah.
Oh well, can I get there and back in a day or two? Man, it'll take 2 days to get there, and never heard a word from him. And I'll be honest with you, that's when I lost all respect, because here you are with an ability to tell the world what's going on, and you're really worried more about your comfort than you are about telling the story. Person who happened to be a conservative. And he said, well, I can't go because there's a war going on. And I just shook my head and walked away. I always believe, and I say this after every conversation, Maria, Michael, when people call in, I always, after all the talk, I say, okay, now, what are you going to do about it?
Yes.
And
thank
it
you.
Freezes people. It really, you hear crickets. Senator Brown and Maria, and said, well, no, I didn't ask you about Maria and Senator Brown. I didn't ask you about Al Sharpton. I didn't ask you about Jesse Jackson. I didn't ask you about John Lewis. What are you going to do about it? Because everybody can do something. And Ron Walters, the late professor Ron Walters, I heard him once lecture, and he said, there's a difference between a moment and a movement. Mm-hmm. And a student asked him, well, what's the difference? All movements require sacrifice. And that's a fact. All movements require sacrifice. Moments don't require, many moments don't. And that's what he was saying to this young student, that you just can't show up, get in your car, show up at a demonstration, get back in your car, go back to the dorm or go back home and then think that you have you've done something. All movements require sacrifice, and people have to be prepared to sacrifice.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. And I remember as a kid going into a store and getting too much change back and going back and giving a dollar or two back to the cashier, and of course my mother just thought that I was a saint for doing that. And I remember my father saying, it's easy to be honest when it doesn't cost you anything, but
that's right.
The true test of character is to be honest, when it does cost you something.
Yeah, you know, that the other line is the difference between reputation, and I think about Donald Trump when I say this, what's the difference between a reputation and character? Reputation is an accumulation of what people think about you. Character is a combination of qualities that we possess. So on my radio show, and it could take an hour doing this question, so what qualities does Donald Trump possess? I ask these people, what qualities does he possess? And I'm going to tell you, didn't get a single call.
Huh.
Didn't get a single call. And it speaks to his now, what do you think about him? Again, if you ask people, well, what do you think about him? Well, that's his reputation. Now, we know he has a reputation, but what qualities does this man actually possess? And I think that's what the speakers at the Democratic Convention were trying to relay to us. You know, we've got to have people with character in government, and especially in the highest offices of our government.
Well, let me ask you, because we're running out of time here, believe it or not. This week, and I know Maria liked this story too, I heard a story that made me smile. It was about a kid named Charlie Woods, who's the 11-year-old son of Tiger Woods, and he won a junior golf tournament. Get this, Maria. 9 holes, he had 3 birdies.
Oh, my gosh.
And he just blew everybody away. But it made me smile because, not only because it was a great story about an 11-year-old kid, but it made me feel normal again, you know, that here was something that wasn't about the coronavirus. It wasn't about, you know, it was about a kid, a father passing on his legacy to a child. So let me ask you, because you have a research staff, what story this week, Joe, made you smile?
All right. I hesitate because somebody once said to me, a negative has 10 times the impact of a positive. Mm-hmm. And I've been so overwhelmed with negatives. That's a great question. I have to give that some thought. The one story, it didn't get a lot of attention, was this young man who was a security guard at a hospital. And he is a young African-American, I think in Louisiana. And he happened to be, he met a doctor who was a surgeon. And they were in the hallway asking in the parking lot, asking, what did he do? He says, well, I'm a surgeon. And his eyes just lit up. Like, it was like the first time he's ever met a surgeon, if you can believe it. Uh-huh. At least somebody took the time to talk to him. And the surgeon, this white surgeon, said, you know what? Why don't you follow me around on your time off? Aww. And come into the operating room with me.
Wow.
And this young African American security guard, minimum wage, you know, he didn't know, you know, poor community. And he said he actually trailed this doctor. I don't know for how long, you know, most news stories, they don't give you more than 5 minutes to tell it. but he, you know, today he is a medical student at the same hospital. He was a security guard.
No.
That's
a good one.
Yeah, it is a good one.
That one stands out. That one stands out. Yeah.
Is that surgeon still around that mentioned?
Yes, I think. Oh, yeah. They interviewed the surgeon, and he talks about he's the one that told the story. He's the one that told the story. Yeah.
Oh.
Well, we're out of time, believe it or not. I've got 1,000 more questions to ask you, so we'll have to invite you back again. But thank you so much for taking the time, especially now that I realize you're up at 3 o'clock in the morning. We very much appreciate you. For our listeners out there, if you're up at 6 o'clock in the morning from 6 to 10, you need to go to channel 126 on Sirius XM and listen to Urban View, because this man tells it like it is. Lots of people call into his show. He's very much loved, and we very much appreciate you being on the show.
I appreciate you having me, and we're unfiltered, so
I love that too. You don't have to worry about FCC, right?
No, I don't worry about it, and I do have a swear jar that I put a dollar in every time I swear. But as I tell people, sometimes you have to be profane to be profound.
Well, that's a great note on which to end the show. Yeah. Thank you so much, Joe Madison. We hope to talk to you again in the future. We're going to leave you with the song in honor of Mr. Madison from when I was in college, if you can believe that, Maria. And no, it's not the Battle Hymn of the Republic. It's Fly Like an Eagle by Steve Miller Band. Go ahead, Maria. You do our sign.
Well, Joe, again, thank you for your graciousness and your time and your passion and continued success with all that you do and your wife, too. And we always would like to let our listeners know how grateful we are for you making us a part of your time, either live or download and listen on demand. We're exceedingly grateful for that.
Well, and have a great week. Yeah, it's mutual, and the best. God bless you, and I wish your family and friends safety out there.
Thank you. And your wife's too.
I've met your wife. She's a lovely person.
Oh yeah,
she really is.
She's
a keeper.
Please. After 40, after 43 years, I don't think.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Well, God bless you, Joe Madison, and thanks, folks, for listening. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
God bless.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.